I think it ends up in something that all of the sectors are treated equally, even when one sector comes forward. So it's not one of these food grab type of things. So I don't think it's fair to describe that what goes on between the agency and the sectors is something that's underhanded or something that's a first come, first serve, because it's not. I think the agency's done a good job of that. So, again, we support this motion, and it was intentionally designed to respect the omnibus amendment.
Maggie?
Maggie Raymond, Associated Fisheries of Maine. I want to thank the committee for bringing this motion forward. I was unable to attend the last Groundfish Committee meeting. I particularly want to thank the NIMS representative on the committee who I was reported to me by industry worked really hard to help support this motion going forward. 18 years ago, I came before this council on behalf of Associated Fisheries of Maine and spoke in favor of closing these areas. We were the only industry group to do that at the time, and as you can imagine, we were quite unpopular, especially once they got closed to scallopers as well. But we really believed that these closures would produce some significant changes in the status of the resource. So we have seen some of that with haddock, but unfortunately, we haven't seen it with any of the other stocks. So in particular in the Gulf of Maine, where these closures came in later to protect Gulf of Maine cod, we don't see that they have produced that desired result. So in some ways, you know, we regret supporting these closures because now it's 18 years. 18 years. What are we waiting for? When are we going to realize that we have to do something different? As others have said, the hard tack is the control. If not this, then what? What is the options for the industry? How do we bring more fish across the dock? How do we pay our bills? How do we support the infrastructure? How do we feed our families? This is an opportunity to bring more fish across the dock. That's what we need to do. We need to, we've heard a lot of concern about effort inshore by larger boats. This moves larger boats, medium-sized boats, offshore. In fact, in some ways, I don't think this motion goes far enough because it doesn't provide any relief from the rolling closures for some of the small boats. This is very limited opportunity here. As Vito said, 5 miles on the western Gulf of Maine closed area. 5 miles. The other areas on George's are seasonal access. There's a very small opportunities here in terms of access to areas that have been closed for a very long time. It's a one-year plan. 1 year. Sector operations plans are for 1 year. We'll have the opportunity to see if it is fruitful, if it does provide more fish across the dock. We believe that the sector operations, part of what this sectors was all about was supposed to be about opportunities for co-management. And that's what we've done. As Vito said, we went into this kicking and screaming, but we've made it work. We're trying to make it work, but we need access to the resource in order to continue to make it work. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to this. I urge you all to fully support this going forward. Let's get the analysis. Let's make a good decision in November. Thank you.
Emily?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Emily Litzinger with Environmental Defense Fund. We support this motion. EDF feels that the time is right to evaluate New England's closed area network, given the length of time closures have been in place and the important changes to the management system for the groundfish fishery. We support the council's approach to consider the utility of closed areas for habitat and groundfish management in an integrated manner. While that large analysis continues, we support this motion to consider exemptions requests from individual sectors for access to groundfish closures that do not overlap with current EFH closures. We believe that access should require 100% at sea monitoring, as well as clear demonstrations of the benefits of access in terms of high catch per unit effort of healthy stocks to low catch per unit effort of weak stocks. Thank you.
Roger Fleming.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Roger Fleming, Earth Justice. We're speaking in opposition to this motion. We understand that this particular ops plan approach was put in place because of some of the advice that was received that in order to open habitat closures, an amendment would be required and a full EIS would be required. But this approach doesn't avoid those requirements. This is still a significant change to the fishery management plan. It's going to require it needs to be done through an amendment. There needs to be a full EIS to evaluate this. And the Omnibus Habitat Amendment provides that opportunity. It's reasonable, we think, to evaluate these closures at this time, but it should be done as part of a comprehensive approach. In the meantime, the exempted fisheries permit process provides an opportunity to get some access to the areas with appropriate sideboards on place to gather some of the data that was just suggested that we need. And frankly, doing this through the operations plan, we share the concern that those operations plans for the sectors are just too much to put at risk with this type of change that would occur through this amendment. Again, the Omnibus Habitat Amendment, my understanding is it's nearly ready to go. If you want to grant this access, do it through an exempted fishing permit. Gather some data that can be fed into the Omnibus Habitat Amendment, and then you can make a comprehensive decision about what to do with these closures in view of the revisions to EFH and the habitat closures. Thank you.
Jeff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jeff Smith with the Nature Conservancy in Maine. Thank you for the opportunity to comment here. A lot of the discussion so far has been centered around the potential impacts on essential fish habitat to opening up these areas and the relationship to the Omnibus Amendment. What I wanted to do is just to make sure that in considering this motion that the Council also considers the potential implications for the ground fish rebuilding efforts, the biology of the fish side of things as part of this motion. We all know the fishery has been declared a disaster. We all know that there are pretty heavy cuts coming and quotas in the coming years. And I just wanted to make sure that the council is aware that there has been some science going on recently. Dr. Graham Sherwood of Gulf of Maine Research Institute and his colleagues have been looking at fish populations inside and outside of closed areas, and in particular looking at cod inside and outside of closed areas. And if I may, I just wanted to share a couple of the conclusions that he has drawn there and make sure that the council is aware of that as they consider this motion. The first thing he found was that the cod sampled inside of the closed areas were bigger, they were healthier, and they were more productive. And that was a pretty clear finding of his research. And what they also found was that the fish inside of the closed areas, and again, this is cod I'm speaking to, were also older than those. They found that there were eight times as many fish that were 5 years or older inside of the closed areas than outside of the closed areas, and that this has real important implications for our rebuilding efforts because of the higher productivity, the better eggs, the better potential for the survival of those eggs, of those older fish as opposed to the younger fish outside of the closed areas. I'm taking this from the GMRI newsletter, their waypoints. I encourage you all to read it and to take a closer look at Graham's work on the differences of the fish and the productivity of the fish inside and outside of these closed areas as you consider your decision on this motion, and also that the agency would do the same if they are considering exemptions to sector plans moving forward. Thank you.
Veto.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I apologize for a second trip here, but it was a very important item I thought would be vital for the council to know. The mobile gear fleet and the a lot of the representatives, very important representatives, and the lobster fixed gear fleet as well. We've talked to some of the scallop representatives. I can tell you that the three industries are very close. I would say we're pretty much there. We now need to spread the word a lot further to our constituents on gear understanding and making sure that we don't have a gear conflict on Area 2 primarily. And just to share with you, the time periods have to do with June to October. We're looking at June 15th to the end of October right now, in the area 4130 to 4150 being a fixed gear area in those months. And we also have the spawning closure, or the what we're not sure what the rationale was, but we're assuming that's a spawning closure from February 15th to May 1. So it looks like the three industries are going to be able to work that out. We're hoping that the council seriously considers that we're sure we're going to be able to work something out and put it into our operations plan based on that negotiation and discussion with the with primarily the lobster fishery. Sounds like the scallop concerns would be more north of the 4150, and that's also not a conflict with the fixed gear. So just wanted to make sure that you had the benefit of that.
Aaron.
Thank you. Aaron Doherty, Penobscot East Resource Center. I just wanted to reinforce some of the comments that have been made earlier, let you know that we agree with many of the comments that were made, particularly Ben Martens and Jeff Smith. I also would encourage you to take a look at Graham Sherwood's work. Some of that was presented in a recent workshop held by Gulf of Maine Research Institute this past summer, looking at cod stock structure. Also, to that issue of cod stock structure, there's morphometric evidence, study of body shape, body structure, particularly for cod, which was also done by Graham Sherwood, that shows that the fish in and around the Cache's Ledge area are actually distinct. They're unique from some of the other fish, even in the Gulf of Maine. So there's a distinction between the population of fish on Cache's Ledge and the western Gulf of Maine area. So there needs to be some consideration given to that, in that the allocation of Gulf of Maine cod right now allows you to catch cod in any of those places, but in fact the Cache's Ledge closure may be protecting a unique subpopulation. I'm not saying don't open a portion of that. I'm just saying that I think some consideration needs to be given to that, in addition to the point that Jeff raised earlier as well. Thank you.
Anyone else? Back to the council. I'm going to start right there at the end and work up Doug and then Mark. And
okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman, for giving me first crack at this. as you know, the council has been working extensively for way too long on the habitat amendment, but we have come up with some a scientifically based rationale for potentially making adjustments to those habitat areas. And as we went through this process, we recognized that there was ground fish mortality closures on that, and it was us that brought it forward this consideration that we need to also make adjustments to the ground fish mortality closures, because has been argued here, we're under hard tax right now. So these mortality closures may not be needed. But we must remember that there are other closures here, and I think primarily this has been considered, that we may want to keep in place because of spawning and a variety of other things. The original motion that was made back in August for opening up these closed areas through the framework as opposed through the having it done through the sector plans did include the area above 4150 would still remain closed in a closed area too. And as you know, I sent a letter to this council back in January identifying some of the large numbers of buried lobster females that are in that area up there with data from VTRs as well as some data from some sea sampling trips that indicated that they were at some times exceeded the total landings, the total harvest in some months. I'm glad that Vito brought up the negotiations that are currently going on between the between the groundfish, the lobster, and the scallop industry. But my concern as ASMC lobster chairman is that we need to have something in there to we can't leave those to the sector plans. We need to have some kind of a seasonal closure out there. And one of the things that I just noticed on Tuesday of this week when I finally got a draft of the document that there is some areas above the 4150 line that are going to be considered for opening here. And given the large numbers of lobsters in that area, I can't support this anymore. Originally, I was going to support this as a consideration for an option in the framework because of the what's going to happen potentially on May 13th. I wanted to have it analyzed. I still had some concern about whether this should be an amendment or a framework, but where I see that has been modified and there is no agreement and there is no management measure in place to prevent mobile tending bottom gear from accessing those areas where there are large concentrations from June through October of buried female lobsters. I can't support this anymore, unfortunately. And maybe Terry might have something that may change my mind, but at this point, that has changed my perspective here.
Yeah, to that point, Doug, should this motion pass, there's a follow-up motion that that addresses the issues you've just raised.
I'd like to see that motion before I vote on this.
Mark Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Obviously a difficult issue. On the one hand, I strongly support access, groundfish access, to closed areas from the overall perspective of giving people flexibility to catch the access the meager catch limits we're going to be able to afford them. But I do have some concerns about defined scale spatial structure that we don't really fully understand. It is true that the catch limit, you know, constrains the overall catch, but it doesn't necessarily protect it over groups of fish or that exhibits fine scale spatial structure reproductive fidelity and so on. So I have some concerns about that. And I also share Doug's concerns about, you know, the lobster, and hopefully we'll hear a solution to that. We both sit on the commission and have primary responsibility for lobster management. So hopefully there will be a solution to that. And the other issue, of course, is the procedural one. And we do have a an omnibus habitat amendment plodding along and working together with groundfish to assess the groundfish mortality closures and the needs for those. To some degree, this gets out ahead of that. So I have some concerns about that, but I'll leave it to the agency to worry about what lawsuits might flow from this should this come to the fore. But on the whole, I think the motion has been crafted as carefully as it can be to negotiate to navigate the shark-filled water. So I'm likely to support it at this point, and I hopefully hear a solution to the lobster problem.
Dave Cato.
OK, Okay. I wanted to mention a couple of things that the public mentioned because I think there's some misconceptions here about the Western Gulf of Maine closed area. It's a sliver on the eastern side. It's deep water. It's not where the recreational fishery fishes. Similarly with caches, vast majority of caches still stays closed. This only opens up deep water around caches. So I just wanted to get that on the record. The second thing I wanted to say is either you believe in hard tax or you don't. No, I personally don't. I never have. I don't think hard tax end overfishing. And I think they can actually make it worse. But anyway, the point is that the environmental industry and this council have backed hard tax in sectors. So apparently everybody else believes in them. And yeah, I want to remind people, we're under a hard tax fishery. These are mortality closures. They are not habitat closures. And I also want to say for the record that there's no evidence in temperate zones that closed areas have any effects on fish stocks. Now, fish respond to three basic things in temperate zones. They respond to bottom water temperature, food, and sex. And bottom water temperature determines where the other two occur. So to that end, and that's why closed areas in temperate zones don't work, because the fish swim in and out of them. They don't stay in them. This isn't the tropics. And, you know, to that end, I still support round fish spawning closures. And those are protected in this measure. We excluded the areas in Area 1 and Area 2 during round fish spawning. We have also set up inside, through the state of Massachusetts and the federal zone and whaleback, spawning closures. I continue to support them. I hope this council will make every endeavor to identify more discrete areas to close during spawning. I think those areas exist on the backside of the Cape. I think they exist on George's Bank. And I think one of our big problems with George's Bank cod, whatever the stock boundary structure is, are the fact that there are no spawning closures for cod on George's Bank. The areas, closed Area 1 and closed Area 2, were primarily closed for haddock. And that's why they haven't done anything for cod. So, see, what else have I got here? As I said during the listening session on day one here, I think we have to admit at some point that certain things don't work. This has been a 16-odd year science experiment with closed areas. If closed areas work, we should have overflowing groundfish everywhere. Instead, we've got a disaster declared. So apparently they don't do much. So I think it's time to, you know, admit when something doesn't work and move on. So to that end, I support the motion.
Going up this side of the table, anybody? Terry Alexander, then Frank Blount, then John Bowie.
Yeah, I'm going to support the motion. I have a long history of fishing in the Cassius area and the eastern edge of the Jeffries closure, Western Gulf of Maine closure, I guess you call it. And that would open us up to fish on some underutilized species, redfish, pollock, monkfish around caches, and redfish and pollock around caches. It opens up pecs, sigsbees. Those have all been closed, and that would be great for our small boat fleet at home. The guys work the edge of that area now, so they'd be able to get up on top of the lumps and stuff. So I'm going to support the motion.
Frank Pound.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Prior to the Groundfish Committee and after the Groundfish Committee, I've probably had more communications with people on this particular issue than almost any issue in all my time on the council. The Western Gulf of Maine, the area that's scheduled to, on here that with the hash marks that could be open, goes back to, I may have been the one that proposed it probably 12 years ago or more. When we first did the Western Gulf of Maine closure, we talked about opening up the deep water for access. We were told, came up a couple of times, time and time again, the service told us we could not open that area because it offered other benefits to other fish than just what we were trying to open it for. It came up at least 3 or 4 years in a row when we were doing things. We were told we couldn't open it. Right now, I believe Gulf of Maine haddock need a reduction. One of the reasons we were talking about opening that area was for Gulf of Maine haddock, for access to them. They're looking at a reduction. I don't think we should be doing this in a framework. I don't think it should be in the sector ops plans. There should be modifications made. I think this is the wrong way to do it. I supported it in the committee, but I will be voting against it today.
John Boyd.
I'm going to speak in favor of it, and if the motion passes, it's going to allow us to review these exemption requests. I think we said we were going to substitute one form of managing fisheries for another form. And so we put in place one form, and now the question is whether or not, having put in place one form, we're going to honor that deal. And we've got hard tax. We put that in place, and now the question is whether a major element of the prior regime is going to be left in place or whether it's going to be removed. And this motion is a test of that. I think that I think that in the testimony from those in the audience, I think there's more agreement than might be apparent. I think there's more agreement on the area should be opened. It's a question of when and how much study and by what mechanism than may be apparent. I see that there are three issues related before the council. One is the essential fish habitat amendment. That's not the subject of this motion, but that needs to be passed, and it needs to be passed as soon as possible. Essential fish habitat needs to be protected. There's been a lot of work that's been put into that, and that needs to be protected, I wouldn't say forever, because, you know, the environment changes and we need to modify as things change. Some of the areas were closed for habitat reasons, but that is one reason you close areas. This amendment that we're voting on exempts areas closed for that. And that's one of the reasons we support this. It doesn't touch either the areas originally closed for habitat protection or the areas identified by the omnibus habitat. So the omnibus amendment needs to get, you know, delivered and voted on. And whether it takes extra meetings, whether the agency can help on that, that work needs to get done. I was talking to Dave last night about it. I mean, a lot of work's been done on this. We need to conclude that because there's a lot of other things that depend on that getting done. So that's one thing that relates to this. Secondly, the work that this vote relates to needs to move forward. And there are issues about gear conflict that various people have talked about. Vito mentioned that the industry is close to working out issues of gear conflict. That's encouraging. We need to look at issues of protected resources and make sure if various gear is in there that we're not harming protected resources. So there are issues that we've got to attend to as we open up these areas. No question about that. And then there's the issue that Laura and others have talked about with the scallopers on the northern edge, that, again, if the essential fish habitat is passed, there's no question there's an emergency building, a pressure between a hard tack on yellowtail
and the scallop industry. You can just see the pressure building between those two. Where is the relief valve between the hard tack on yellowtail and the scallop industry? Where is the relief valve? I think the relief valve is the northern edge of Georgia's Bank. Maybe you all who have more experience see another relief valve. Well, that depends on the essential fish habitat, right? Another closed area decision. So there's these three related issues all around closed areas. Why are they closed? What data do we need to make decisions? We can always use more science, but there is a sense of urgency. We have to make decisions. There's never enough science. We have to make decisions. So this amendment, if it passes, allows us to move forward. It exempts the habitat areas, the old habitat areas, and the one under consideration in the omnibus. So it is worth advancing. Thank you.
John Quinn.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, and I will be supporting this amendment. In my other life, I am an attorney, and I'm very familiar with building records. So I would like to enter into the record a couple of additional documents, one National Standard 8, and the other the oath of office that I took the other day in taking this position. I see every one of these issues as a delicate dance between fish, fishermen, and habitat, every single one of these issues. And to suggest that it's illegal for us to try and follow National Standard 8 or for me to uphold the oath of office I took the other day, I take great umbrage at that. Under National Standard 8, we are required, take into consideration the impact on fishing communities. That's what we are doing here. How do we get into those closed areas to minimize the impact of this low assessment we are working with? At the same time, I took an oath of office with my fellow members that said we are required under law to balance competing interests in our decision making. That's what I'm doing. That's what National Standard 8 requires us. And I think this amendment is a well-crafted way to try and do that delicate dance, get some access to those closed areas, at the same time minimize impacts on communities, and at the same time protect the fish as well. Thank you.
Jake Preble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick comment. My concern with this, as we have been moving along with it, has been the issue that Doug brought up, and I'm glad he did, and glad that Vito brought up what he said. I've been very much concerned with the potential for gear conflicts. I remember 30 years ago when I was dragging it, we always had deals worked out between the fixed gear industry and the south of New England, this is, and the mobile gear industry. And we used to post them on the bulletin board at the old co-op. We knew where the fixed gear people were working, and they knew where we were working, and we've managed to avoid conflicts with that kind of agreement. So I'm particularly gratified that Vito came up here with that kind of thing virtually in hand from what he said. And I think that's that for me, it eliminates a lot of my angst about this. But I agree with Doug. I'd like to see the other motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm concerned about this motion in the sense that I don't know the criteria by which sector operations plans will be evaluated. I think the industry needs to know that. I think the public needs to know that. I don't think we've done enough ecological or economic analysis on this question. I don't think we've really fully vetted the legal implications of this analysis. So I have a lot of questions that and concerns about this before we move forward. I want to see relief to the industry. These are tough times. They need it. But I also don't want to see short-term gain compromising the long-term health. There are a lot of people who want to stay in this industry for a long time as stewards, as their prior generations have, and I want to give them a chance. And I don't want to do anything rash. Thank you.
Yeah, I'll preface my remarks by indicating that there will be another motion following this one, a motion that is a result of discussions we had at our last Groundfish Committee meeting last week. It's a motion I made that was adopted by the committee to offer up to the council here today, and it's specific to the issue of concerns about the lobster resource within these closed areas, the lobster fishery within those closed areas, the potential for gear complex, potential for displaced fishing effort from inside the closed areas to outside the closed areas as a consequence of other gear coming in, competing for ground, and concern about endangered species. I suspect that once that motion is made, that there'll be unanimous support for it because it relates to the need for the regional office to evaluate any request in a sector's operation plan or plans for access requires them to consider those specific issues before they entertain any access. So that's a prefacing remark. I'm open-minded on this issue, thought about it quite a bit. Many people around the table have highlighted some of my concerns. There are pros and there are cons to this particular action. One of the cons, as I see it, is that any vessel that's allowed access into those areas through an operation plan exemption wouldn't necessarily have an observer on board. Maybe that's something that would need to be considered by the regional office in evaluating the operations plans. Maybe the sectors themselves would offer that up as an initial step. Anyone going in should have an observer on board. Otherwise, we end up having vessels fishing in those areas and we get no information back as to what's going on, except extrapolations that would be rather wild and likely just guesswork. So we would need to know what's happening. So that troubles me, but I think that can be fixed by creativity on the part of the regional office. So inadequate sea sampling, that's a concern. Another concern would be that by following this approach, the council continues to divorce itself from sector management by, as we said at the committee meeting, punting these very important issues to the regional office. The National Marine Fisheries Service, for the most part, is, and I suspect will in the future, be managing the groundfish fishery through sector management and the operations plans. Is that a bad thing? Well, for a while, I thought maybe it is a bad thing. I'm still concerned about it, but I'm not as concerned as I used to be, in large part because of what John Buller did yesterday. I was very encouraged by what John did. Again, I give thanks to John for the regional office taking this approach, working with the sectors, notably the Northeast Seafood Coalition, to figure out in a very creative way how to deal with the harbor porpoise closure. To me, that demonstrated some real initiative on the part of the service and gives me every reason to be encouraged that they will indeed improve the way in which they deal with sectors, their operations plans, and the communication with this council as to what's happening with those operations plans. Representing a state, I'm kind of tired of being on the outside trying to look in, but I can't because it's their operations plans. So I'm not as concerned about that as I used to be. So pros and cons. The pro, of course, is, as already highlighted, and this is very important to stress, these particular closures are fishing mortality closures. We're managing with hard TACs, and yes, there are some worms with the hard TAC program, especially with not very good at-sea coverage of the entire fleet, 30%, 25%. Still not sure we know what's going on at sea, and I'm still not sure we know what's being landed. But anyways, it's a hard TAC program. These are closures implemented to deal with fishing mortality reductions primarily. The motion covers habitat concerns, so I'm open-minded on this. I'm going to do a lot more reflecting on it, following up on some of the points made by individuals in the audience and around the table. So for now, I will support this motion and look forward to continued analysis of its impacts, of its significance, and all the pros and cons.
Mary Beth, did you want to make a comment? Anyone down there at the... Tom Dempsey.
Thanks. I think we've all had a chance to hear a tremendous amount, and I know people have concerns, and I share many of those concerns. We focus a lot here, and as John mentioned yesterday, his listening tour has heard an awful lot about the science, and the science is admittedly flawed in many cases, But we as managers also have a responsibility to be honest about what this problem is, what we're dealing with right now. And we have a science problem. We also have a fish problem. We have some resource problems. And you don't have to look any farther than the cod stocks to realize this. Right now, any of you could get all the Western Georges Bank cod quota you want for the change in your pocket. We're landing them at $3.50, $4 a pound. And we've caught 16% so far this year of our quota. So we have to recognize that hard tax is a management decision. It's a management decision that we have already made, and I'm not advocating that we move away from that. But we need hard tax that actually represent the biomass in the ocean. And so, you know, I share some of the concerns, the real resource concerns about where we are right now with some of these stocks. And we heard that from some people in the audience, and I think we need to start talking about that openly. There is no assessment that's going to go out there and tell us that some of these stocks are, you know, by accident, are 6-10 times where our catch rates are. We have some real problems. So, and there are risks with this approach. You know, this sector ops approach to increase opportunities, it's not a fix-all. This isn't going to make a terrible year okay for anybody. It's something to consider to mitigate some of what we're seeing in 2013. It shouldn't be undertaken lightly. I certainly don't take it on lightly. I think there are some real benefits and real risks. One of the things that has come up and one of the things that I've recognized is we're likely to see some of those risks involve whether we can get sectors operational on May 1. And that's something that sectors are going to have to deal with as they choose which of these exemptions they pursue if we move this forward, because there are going to be people who have concerns who want that process to be transparent and they want to be able to provide comments in it. That's going to slow this down, and we have to recognize up front what the ramifications of that are. Hopefully we'll have more discussions about that prior to the final action in November. I will say that I'm only supportive of moving forward with this because it increases opportunities only where it's appropriate. Dr. Pierce mentioned the follow-up motion. And I think we can expand harvesting opportunities in groundfish only where sectors can demonstrate that they're not undermining our other existing management obligations and our management priorities. I think that's the right way to go. There are risks and there will be hard decisions as sectors come forward with specific exemptions. But I support pursuing this alternative in the document, and we still have an awful lot of things to think through in terms of actually putting it on the water. Thank you.
Okay, we've gone around the table, and we're starting again. Doug?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I've expressed my concerns about the way this motion is written from the lobster resource perspective. I think a way that I could support this motion would be to include the subsequent motion that Terry was indicated was coming up as part of this motion. So I'm going to make a motion to amend, and I can either read the whole motion or you can just cut and paste it in on it. But I'm going to make a motion to amend that we also include in this motion the wording that when considering sector requests for access to the closed area, the regional office should include inter alia considerations of the potential gear conflicts, shifts in fishing effort outside the closed areas, and impacts to protected and species and lobsters. And if I can get a second to that, I will. I'd like to speak very briefly to it, Mr. Chairman.
Been seconded by Dave Preble.
Okay, thank you. As I stated previously, this whole concept of changing the habitat closed areas and removing certain groundfish closed areas needs to also take into consideration other species that are not managed by this council that can be impacted. And we've clearly sent data to this council and to the National Marine Fisheries Service indicating that there are potential impacts at the October ASMSC meeting, we will be receiving our technical committee report on the impacts of mobile tending bottom gear to lobsters. And we will forward that information to both the council and to National Marine Fisheries Service. I have to admit I'm still reluctant to sort of leave this open up in the air to let National Marine Fisheries Service make this decision, and also in light of the fact that the three groups of scallops and lobster and groundfish industry have not come to this agreement yet. And I know I'm going to be waiting very patiently for them to come to that agreement and have that letter in hand before we make final decision on this. But with this amendment, if this amendment passes, I'll be willing to support this for consideration so that we can get the analysis, the impact of this in Framework 48, so I can make an informed decision about whether I will support it.
Could I ask Gene or Mitch to give us a non-legal interpretation of inter alia? Not everybody may understand what that means,
yeah,
and just no. So that's why I would like it understood that, you know.
I that's what I'm doing. It means among other things. Yeah.
Okay. Dave Preble, then I've got to go back to the audience.
Okay, I'll be very, very brief. I want to thank Doug for bringing that up. That helps a lot. I think in response to one question that he raised, that he's still nervous that it gives too much power to the agency, I think that in this discussion we have been thoroughly clear about our intent. And so I don't have a lot of angst about that. I think we've been thoroughly clear about what we mean here, and I agree with that, because although there's an agreement among three different segments of the industry, we do need a backstop to make sure that they live up to it. So I'm pleased with this.
Okay, I'm going to go back to the audience. Anybody like to make further comments? Bonnie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Speaking for the offshore lobster industry who does fish out in closed area 2, I would like to say that we do support this provision. I thank Mr. Grout for putting that forward. This is something that we are definitely working toward with the groundfish and hopefully the scallop fleet. And it is very close, and I appreciate the council considering the fact that this is an area that we need to protect during a certain time, and the rest of the time we absolutely support the groundfish people getting in there. Thank you.
Jackie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jackie O'Dell, Northeast Seafood Coalition. We support this motion for this provision to be included, and thank you for describing what inter alia is. We're having a small discussion about that in the back of the room. One additional point I wanted to make up that I don't think was stressed enough during this entire discussion you've had is the opportunity loss we have right now for U.S. fishermen and the U.S. industry. Georges Bank haddock, we are just not catching even close to what we can be catching on that very healthy stock. It's really frustrating to the industry year after year to have the track and the TMGC process go forward and to see that the Canadians are catching around 94% of their tack when we're catching 18% of our tack. We have got to use this, especially now in light of the disaster that we have declared in this fishery. We have got to provide opportunities, narrowly focused opportunities, but opportunities to be able to target this stock. And this provides that opportunity. So we have to, you know, there's a huge economic loss that's occurring, and it's really frustrating to see the Canadians doing a much better job at that than we are. So thank you.
Anyone else? Back to the council, Matt McKenzie.
I think there's a big question in this about staff resource time. The staff is heavily burdened right now with many other actions that need to be addressed, and I'd like to perhaps hear from Paul perhaps what resources would be able to be dedicated towards analyzing this if it moves forward.
Well, we have the closed area technical team that will look at that, look at this, and that will that will delay their efforts on looking at the overall groundfish impact on the habitat areas and what the groundfish committee, what they would prepare for the groundfish committee and advisors to look at concerning habitat. So it gets your the mitigating measures done quicker, but the habitat amendment is delayed.
Other comments, questions from the council? I'm going to call a question. All those in favor of the motion to amend. Motion carries 17-0-0. We're back on the main motion as amended. Further discussion. Call the question. All those in favor? Opposed? 1. Abstention? 0. 16-1-0. The motion carries. Terry.
Thank you, Doug, for dispensing with the next motion. The committee has three more motions. The next one is, after reviewing the PDT identified complications for revising the Georges Bank Yellowtail Flounder operating area, the committee recommends the Georges Bank Yellowtail Flounder area not be redrawn in the sector framework. Carried 901.
Tom.
So this motion might seem a little obscure if you weren't at the Crownfish Committee meeting. Back, I believe it was at the June Council meeting, the Council passed a motion which was kind of the opposite of this. It said, consider modifying the Georges Bank Yellowtail Flounder area. And the idea here is that the Georges Bank Yellowtail Flounder area is a fairly large stock area which includes some deep water north of Georges Bank where yellowtail flounder are rarely caught. So I think in the concept in everybody's mind was to carve out an area on Georges Bank where when sectors were approaching their yellowtail limit or maybe to avoid approaching their yellowtail limit, they could fish in these areas and they would be treated differently. We would have perhaps a different discard strata or their catch wouldn't be accounted against their ace. It was a little unclear what consider meant. The PDT looked at this idea. We identified a number of issues with this approach. We brought them forward to the committee. We pointed out that it is entirely within sectors, within their operations plans, to modify their behavior to basically accomplish the same, much of the same thing. And the committee agreed with us, and this is basically the reply to the council saying we considered it and we suggest not moving forward with it.
Thank you, Tom. Go to the audience. Comments? Ron?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ron Smolos, Fisheries Survival Fund. I think this is at the point where it might consider a motion, as Dave Goethe suggested, of considering charging the committee and the PDT to identify yellowtail hotspots that could be analyzed for seasonal closures to achieve the SSC recommended suggestion of taking actions to minimize bycatch.
Further audience comment? Veto.
Yeah, we thought a lot about this at the last motion. I mean, at the committee meeting, and it certainly appeared like there's a squeeze the balloon type of effect. You end up with some areas ending up with a much higher rate. So we're not certain that this is going to produce positive results. Additional input controls and seasonal closures are not something that the groundfish industry would be looking forward to supporting at all. It's going in the wrong direction for what we're looking at. But if the PDT has the time to at least show some analysis as to whether this would have any positive effect, I suppose that would be good. But we were pretty convinced at the committee meeting that this may not have the result that some people thought it would. So
does that mean I'm having trouble understanding you supporting or not supporting this
motion? Support the committee motion at this time.
Anyone else? Back to the council. Terry Alexander.
I happened to be there at the committee meeting, and it appeared that there's a fairly big area northwest of the bank where the discard rate is really low on yellowtails. 522, it pretty much encompasses the whole of area 522. And then as you get up on the bank, the areas light up more. And it's my understanding that when they credit discards to you for an area, you're taking the average over the entire area. I guess I'm asking Tom. Okay.
Yeah, that's correct. If you might allow me a little liberty to interject here. We have a next motion that talks about the discard issue, the very next motion after this one.
Okay, then I'll just wait till then.
Any other comment? Laura?
Yeah, I just want to speak to Terry's point, and Tom and I were just discussing this, is that the idea that your total number of discards of yellowtail might look different if we knew that certain areas don't have the yellowtail in them, so that we could actually take that off the top. But we can't do that unless we have greater resolution on understanding where the discards take place. So I believe that the second motion is going to speak to that. Thank you.
Further comments? Call the question. All those in favor of the motion? Terry.
Committee motion to direct the PDT to develop alternatives to revise the existing sector discard strata for Georges Bank yellowtail flounder. Instead, stratify discards on Georges Bank by statistical area or by groups of statistical areas with a goal of the highest practical resolution. Carried the committee 901.
Committee motion. I'm going to go to the audience for comment. Can't see who's got, is that Gibb?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gibb Brogan with Oceana. I just have a question for the regional office, or maybe the science center on this, is what effect will this have on the observer needs for the fishery as we're moving forward? And I'm hoping that you've got some idea of what your plan is for observer coverage for 2013 and at-sea monitoring for this fishery. What effect does this have on the monitoring needs for the fishery? I don't know whether somebody from the agency can talk about that one.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
this is obviously a consideration that we have to look at very carefully. The finer scale at which we're looking at things, the greater the demand for monitoring, and the resources are stretched. So I guess what we have to do is just look at, if this goes forward, what kind of recommendations come from the PDT, and then we'll have to look at, you know, exactly to what extent we can address the monitoring needs. So my suggestion is that question needs to be front and center, but it shouldn't. The fact that we can't answer that right now should not prevent this analysis from going forward.
Okay, thanks very much.
Anyone else in the audience? Rito.
Vito Gigoloni, Northeast Seafood Coalition. We support this motion for the analysis. I think it would be worthwhile to look at it. One of the discussions was how sectors could internally reallocate discards anyway based upon where fishermen fish. But just to be honest, there's one sector manager per sector maximum. It's actually less than an average of one sector manager per sector. And that's going to be a pretty heavy software lift and a lot of work. It's not something that's happening automatically right now. So this would assist that and make it a lot easier on the sectors to determine which members should be receiving the higher rate and who should be receiving the lower rate, and rearranging that. This would simplify it and would make it more automatic. But I guess we got to wait and see what the analysis says. So hopefully the PDT doesn't mind doing that work, because it would be helpful.
Anyone else in the audience? Back to the council. Call the question. All those in favor of the motion? Seventeen zero zero. Terry.
Last committee motion. It's not directly related to Framework 48. Is to recommend to the council that the council request NIMS to incorporate the science-based recommendations from the Atlantic Cod Discard Mortality Workshop into ACE tracking for both cod stocks and all gear types beginning in fishing year 2013. Carried the committee 702.
Committee motion, no second. I'm going to go to the audience. Back to the council. Call the question. All those in favor of the motion? 17-0-0. You're on the roll now.
That concludes my report.
Doug Grout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We've spent a lot of work, and the Groundfish Committee has done a lot of work trying to, in this framework, trying to mitigate some of the dramatic impacts that we may be facing here next year. Within some very limited constraint, wide or very strong constraints on what we actually can and can't do, and I compliment them for bringing this forward. There's one part of our fishery that's very small, that the hook gear fishermen that have been impacted by some of the Amendment 16 regulations, and will be dramatically impacted next year by this. And they sent a letter to the council, and I realize it was considered and discussed at the committee, but I'd like to offer a motion to include one small, hopefully very simple provision that may help this group out as we move forward to 2013. And that is, I'm going to make a motion to include in Framework 48 a provision to change the current trimester TAC apportionments for the common pool to a two-period system, with period one running from May 1 to September 30, and period two running from October 1 to April 30. If I could get a second, I'd like to speak to my rationale behind this.
Seconded by Matt McKenzie.
One of the things that has been difficult for this group is they primarily, a lot of them, particularly in the Gulf of Maine, are targeting cod. And when we split up the quota between three periods, it provides for a very, very small quota during that first trimester when they do catch a lot of their cod. Obviously, a lot of these guys are not fishing during the winter because they're in very small boats, generally less than 30 feet. They had made a request when we were putting up the emergency action to completely eliminate the trimesters, but I couldn't even get a second for that. So I'm offering this up as I guess what I'd call a compromise that would help out these folks who, again, don't amount to they don't have very many landings and don't have that much impact on the resource. But they are people that do make some portion of their living on our groundfish species here. And I hope that we will take try to provide some small relief for these vessels in Framework 48. Thank you.
Thank you, Doug. And as you and I have discussed, I'm just going to ask a couple of questions. And it's not because I think we shouldn't be doing this, but and I had asked Tom earlier how close we were to tipping over the Christmas tree, and he said it was wavering. And I guess, you know, it looks on the face of it like it might be a simple thing to do, but I just don't understand necessarily the amount of analysis and et cetera that has to go on for it. And I just would like to try and put Tom on the spot and ask him essentially whether you think that this is, just so that people understand that going into this, is this a lot of analysis? Are we really at a point where, you know, we're flirting with or causing the delay of Framework 48?
Well, yes, I think we are. This, you know, to be honest, we've jammed a lot of stuff in Framework 48. We haven't made as much progress on some things, and by we, I mean the groundfish plan development team hasn't made as much progress on the at-sea monitoring issues as we thought. The addition of the closed area access thing, while much of that work is going to be done by a group called the Closed Area Technical Team, there is some overlap between the Closed Area Technical Team and the PDT, so it's not like it's a completely independent group. There are some people that are on both. This particular measure is, you know, in comparison to the closed area or the ASM, is not a particularly difficult measure. There are, the motion has passed, I assume, would be changing this for everybody. And I don't have any idea what the impacts would be on other parts of the common pool fishery or other stocks in other areas. And one of the things we would have to do is figure out how to split up the quotas, you know, whether to just do it 50-50. But I don't know, fishing patterns from different stocks differ from at different times of the year, so 50-50 may not be the way to go for every stock. So I have concerns about getting Framework 48 done, period. This is not a huge item, but it is, you know, the framework is going to be difficult to complete.
I'm just wondering out loud here at the moment, Doug, whether there might be another way to accomplish what, you know, what this wants to do in a more discrete fashion, really focused at the hand gear category. And I'm just wondering whether this is, you know, the concept would be something that maybe the groundfish committee could try and honed down before it actually goes in some form. I'm trying to suggest some things here.
Well, just to, you know, the long-term big picture with them is that they've been waiting for Amendment 18 as a mechanism to potentially carve out, you know, their allocation into it. But obviously, we've had the council has recently, last year, decided that had to be a lower priority because of some of the crises that we're facing right now. To me, a very simple thing wouldn't require even less analysis would be to eliminate the trimesters. I mean, we went through the first 2 years of Amendment 16 without the trimesters and just let them fish. But now we have that provision in place. And as I said, I tried once before to do that and couldn't even get a second. But I've talked to a number of people on the council here, and this seems to have more traction than the complete elimination of it. If there's a mechanism for doing something like this outside of this action that would be in place by May 1st, you know, I'm certainly open to it if anybody thinks that can be done. But I knowing the process requirements here and the heavy workload we already have, I didn't know any other way to get this on the table. So
I'm going to go to the audience for any comments. Yes, sir.
Good morning. My name is Paul Hoffman. I'm one of the hand gear fishermen that Doug had mentioned. The hand gear fishery is probably the smallest group in the fishing industry. I think we're down to 6 active fishermen. In 1972, the Marine Mammals Protection Act was enacted. The one marine mammal that they did not put on the list was the small hand gear fisherman. We need some type of break. This summer, the white hake tack was reached, and they shut down our fishery for 3 weeks in the first trimester. So we could not fish for cod or any other ground fish because the common pool had reached the white hake, the white hake tack. We need to some help. Eliminating trimesters would help us. I probably have the smallest fishing vessel in the fleet. I fish in a 20-foot center console. So weather is a major factor for me. The fall and winter, or as Doug mentioned, the off seasons are out of the question for most of us. I ask you to listen to Doug's proposal and see if you could help us out. Otherwise, this probably may be the last time you talk to a hand gear fisherman at any of these meetings. Thank you.
Anyone else in the audience? Back to the council. George.
I understand, or I thought, Tom, that the committee was going to go back and look at this particular gear as it relates to at least white hake. Was the white hake catch in the first trimester, I think, was less than 1%. And I had asked the question as to why hand gear was one of the gears that was, you know, shut down when the tack was caught. And I think you indicated you were going to go back and look at that. So I was thinking that the committee was going to continue discussing this in terms of potentially excluding hand gear from the trimester closure because it had such a small catch?
Well, my recollection's a little different. I thought the committee said they'd wait and discuss it at today's council meeting and decide how to proceed.
Anyone else on the council? Tom.
Thanks. I'm just trying to figure out where we ended up with the workload. I support at least considering this. I understand that you know, guys feel like it's really critical to them, and I definitely want. I don't want to move on from it if we can do something good. But the way it's written, it's framework 48, and the answer I heard from Tom was that adding anything was not going to allow it to work. So. Is there an amendment or is there a change to this that's possible so that we can commit to considering it and putting in the next action? It seems like it's a good idea that I think we should look at, but I don't think we can afford to move Framework 48 back.
I mean, you know, you could add some language that it would go in the next available action. Tom, Doug Grout, and then Tom Dempsey.
You know, the difficulty with that, as you know, is that it would likely not it would not get in place before May 1. And clearly, if this fails, then we'll try again in the next action. It'll come up, but it's not going to help them. May 1, like we're trying to help everybody else on May 1, when we're going to be seeing these huge, huge reductions. So,
Tom Dempsey.
I can support the concept, but certainly not if it bumps any of the existing priorities of the work items we have in Framework 48. So, I'm just trying to think through whether there's a way to do this. If this motion were to pass, is there any way, I know Tom likes to clear the entire to-do list in each action, but is there a way to put this at the bottom of it? And if there is time prior to November action, then we can direct the PDT and staff to work on it, but only after you know the other things that are already included as must-move items in the framework. I'd be comfortable with an approach like that, but if we're going to reallocate staff resources right now, to this, if it's going to come above bottom on the line, I don't think I can support it.
Paul Howard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Another consideration might be this is so insignificant, I think, in terms of the whole general, the whole common pool tack, looking at just the hook. Do we have any indication of the common pool if they prefer two seasons over three seasons? That would help the council vote, right? I mean, those folks that you're talking about are a small majority of the common pool, and how does the common pool feel about this?
I have taken from the council's actions that they did not favor eliminating the trimesters altogether. Council would not even provide a second to me, and I assume that our industry members here and our state representatives did that with the knowledge that there was going to be some objection to eliminating the trimesters completely. So what I was trying to offer up here was something that, because as I understand, there are some people that want to have some quota or landings availability, fishing opportunities available during the winter, so they may want to have some portion of the cod or whatever tax available for the winter, and without the trimesters or in this case a semester approach, there's a potential, from what I've been understanding talking to other people, that they would be that some of the quotas could be used up before the winter fishery. I think it's for pollock is what I've been told by certain council members would come up. So that's why I was trying to offer something that would be a compromise that would address the needs of the rest of the common pool. Again, not talking to the fishermen themselves, but talking to our council representatives that are impacted by that. So, Dave Gaethel.
When we had this discussion at the Groundfish Committee meeting, I think one of the meetings, I think it was last year, there were people that came forward from the industry and supported the trimesters because it spread the fish out so that they could fish in the trimester when, you know, they could catch the fish that benefited them the most. So I actually have a question for Tom. In the trimester system, Tom, are the fish just divided up evenly over the three trimesters, or are they differentially divided up somehow?
The trimester system came out of amendment, originally came out of Amendment 13, carried over in Amendment 16. They're not divided up evenly. It varies a little bit stock to stock. It was not real rigorously done. It was done with input between the committee and the PDT and what was caught. It hasn't been examined since it was adopted, I don't think.
Well, what I was wondering was, in terms of this motion to make the analysis relatively painless, recognizing that nothing's painless in this process, if we just divided up the fish proportionally, and that would be the analysis. You know, in other words, what's May 1st to September 30th, May, June, July, August, September, that's 5 months. And so, you know, 5/12 of the fish go into that period and 7/12 of the fish go into the rest of the period. Would, if that was specified in the motion, would that simplify things somewhat?
Any thoughts on that or not?
Yeah, that would, sorry, I was thinking of something else. Yeah, I think that would make it a little easier. At least we wouldn't have to sort through that.
Then I would suggest to the maker and the seconder of the motion that they might want to add that to the motion to make this more palatable to the council for inclusion in Framework 48. In other words, simplify the analysis.
I'm certainly willing, Mr. Chairman, to make that amendment that it would be that the allocation of the quotas of the different species would be just split up 5/12 during period one and 7/12 during period two, unless there's, you know, some problems with that. But whatever would make it simple and easy for the analysis to be done so that the Christmas tree doesn't topple over. Tom.
Maybe this is prompted because of Sue's comment a couple minutes ago. Maybe a better approach is to hone in on where the problem is, which is the hand gear guys, and the issue that led to the closure of the hand gear guys was a white hake catch, and they catch very small amounts of white hake. They catch, I think, of the vessels that were in the common pool, they brought in roughly 3% of the white hake into the common pool. Over the last couple of years, they've been catching maybe 1% of the white hake that's caught by the common pool. So one approach that might be easier to do and might be more focused is you just say that, you know, the hand gear A guys are not subject to any closures due to white hake. Now, that doesn't necessarily solve the problem for other species. They may still run into the problem with Gulf of Maine cod next year, where there's a closure in a trimester period because of Gulf of Maine cod. I'm not sure what the hand gear A guys' catch of Gulf of Maine cod has been in recent years, but they account for on the order of 15% to 20%, that varies a little from year to year, of the PSC that's in the common pool. So, I mean, they're actually a pretty big chunk of the Gulf of Maine cod that's brought into the common pool. So, you know, exempting them from the TAC period may not make sense for Gulf of Maine cod, but maybe this is an easier way for White Hake. It only solves it for one stock, and, you know, if there's another stock next year, then we might be back in here again. But just offer that as a suggestion.
I think that's a good suggestion, Doug.
Yeah, Tom, do you so if we were to do something like that, is that going to be less analysis for you in Framework 48 to sit there and exempt that gear than this type of a motion? Is that you're saying that would not cause the Christmas tree to tip over?
Well, I think it would be less analysis because we'd be, as was mentioned here, we'd be talking about measuring impacts on a lot fewer boats. We already know what their catches are, so, you know, we'd have to speculate, well, what if their whitehead catches go up? But, I mean, they're not having any catches at all to speak of. I think it would, potentially, I think it would be easier. It avoids the issue of maybe there are common pool boats that like the trimester tag system. But, it, you know, it does. It's not a blanket solution. It gets them out of the whitehead problem. There could very possibly be other stocks that we could readily identify that we could add to the list. They don't catch flounders, you know. So you could say you're exempt. They may already be exempt from that one. I don't know. But you could say that, you know, we could take a quick look at what the catches have been in groundfish, identify the ones they don't catch, and say you're exempt from the trimester tax for these species, which is consistent with the approach used on the trimester tax generally, the philosophical approach behind it. The trimester tax don't affect people that don't catch species.
Doug.
So if we were to have the PDT look at the species that they could potentially be exempted from the accountability measures for the trimester tax, would that be a light lift for you?
Pretty light, yeah.
Okay. Then if I can withdraw my motion, if the seconder agrees, and I'll make another motion.
Without objection. Consider it withdrawn.
So then if I might, Mr. Chairman, I will make a motion to include and have the PDT do analysis to include in Framework 48 provisions that would exclude the hand gear A and B from the accountability measures for white hake and other species if they see that the hand gear A lands very small amounts of without having a percentage. I have to use a sort of a crow, a very rough motion here.
I'm not sure that's the exact wording. I would think that you have to eliminate them from the in-season AMs. Otherwise, at the end of the season,
I'll accept that perfection. Sorry about that. But, and other species that the hand gear has insignificant catches of.
Tom, while you're working at it and I'm just throwing out the thought, it seems to me that other species that they don't catch, I mean, I think you got to have species that they catch less than 1% of or something like that. I mean, you got to.
Why don't we leave it vague for now? Species that they catch small amounts, and we'll figure out the percentages later. And I also had Karen add in a language there that I was trying to capture your comment, Mr. Chair, which is the idea that they're not subject to a trimester closure, but if the close is because the overall tack is caught, they would be subject to that. Now, I don't know if that's consistent with what people want.
I think that's fair, though. I'm fine if there's a second. Is there a second to the motion? Tom Dempsey. Discussion at the council. Call the question. All those in favor of the motion? 16 opposed, abstention, 16-0-0. The motion carries. Terry.
Tom, is there anything else?
No, I think we've done quite enough for this morning.
From the committee, that is.
Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had made a motion yesterday that you had felt was best considered under groundfish, so if Karen could bring that motion back up. And I can read it again for the record, that the council requests that the U.S.-Canada Steering Committee negotiate with our Canadian counterparts for a one-time request to trade some amount of Georges Bank East Haddock from the U.S. 2013 share in return for an amount of Georges Bank Yellowtail from the Canadian 2013 share, with no numbers included.
Seconded by Laura. Discussion. Peter Kendall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a question of why would you include a one-time request in that?
That language is included in this motion because there is a discussion at the TMGC in the steering meeting, steering committee, about having some policies around trading. So I don't want this motion to be confused with that. This would be a one-time trade. It expresses the council's intent and also would allow the TMGC and the steering committee to move forward with discussions that would be ongoing.
John Bullard. Peter Kendall. I'm losing track here. Terry.
Mary Beth, just a quick follow-up on Peter's question. So it's your intention that this request be before the intersessional?
Yes, I think to actually have it be effective for May of 2013, this would have to take place before February.
Paul Howard.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I think Tom mentioned yesterday that this has to be incorporated in a council action. And I don't know how possibly we can do all the analysis about how that's going to happen in a council action before May of 2013. So I think you need to discuss how will this be implemented under the council process.
Actually, I thought when we had this discussion, Gene had an innovative way of looking at that. I don't remember the details of that, but he did bring that up.
Well, yeah, I mean, I made the suggestion that if there that the allocation be subject up front to possible adjustment based on additional quota being adjusted through other means like a negotiated trade. And I have to say one concern I have is it's not clear in my mind exactly how this affects the allocation of those that of the fish that's going to be traded away and whether that's appropriately done through this mechanism.
Paul?
To make this happen, it needs to be in a council document with analysis. Not just the TMGC can do this, but it's got to be adopted by the council. So I don't know what document that would be put in and how the public would get input to it.
Well, if we're talking about putting this, I mean, I think it would have to occur before Framework 48 and put it into Framework 48 with an adjustment mechanism. Now, I don't know if that's going to happen in time. If it's done after 48, then there may be a problem of how it gets done. So, I don't know how soon this can be done. If we can do this before we finalize Framework 48, then we could set up a system to handle it, although I still have the concern about allocation here, allocation effects.
I go to the audience. Any comments? Back to the council. Tom?
I support this. I guess, let me just say, first and foremost, I do support this. I think we need to go after whatever additional yellowtail we can. It seems like if we're going to struggle to get 48 on the water by May 1, that it's not dissimilar putting a placeholder here on Georges Bank yellowtail from what we're doing with the cod stocks, which is replacing effectively a specific number with the number will be inserted here, and outlining, you know, what that number is. Right now it's 500. If it changes, that number will be inserted there. So I think this, I don't share the reservations or concerns about how this is going to line up. I think there's actually other stocks for which we're taking an approach similar to what we're doing here, and I think first and foremost the highest priority is to make this trade if at all possible. So I support this motion.
Dave Prebble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I support it too, but I'd like to point out something. When Rich Canastra a little while ago mentioned fishing for scraps, I ran some numbers, and Dr. Pierce asked me to run these by the council. Take me just a moment. Georges Bank inside of 100 fathoms or above 100 fathoms, about 8,000 square miles. At 236 metric tons, that's 65 pounds per square mile. 16% of that for the scallopers is 10 pounds per square mile. If it's 8% for the scallopers, that's 5 pounds per square mile. The entire amount, 83,000 pounds, is less than the whole capacity of an 80-foot dragger. And at 41,000 pounds for 8%, it's less than half of the whole capacity of a dragger. But, yes, I support this.
Anybody else on the council? Call a question. Up, Tom.
Well, I just want to point out that this is not going to be an easy analytic problem for Framework 48 because we don't yet know what the allocations are between this groundfish and scallop fishery. We don't know how those will change if the quotas change. And it's not entirely clear to me if we know yet what the overall quota is. And we don't know yet whether the Canadians would agree to an overall quota that was conceivably different than 500 tons. So, I mean, while in some respects it's similar to the approach for the cod stocks, it's a lot of different because there's a lot more moving pieces here. With the two cod stocks, we're talking about a range only. With this, we're talking about a range and a lot of other alternatives that interact with the range. So this is the danger here, and the reason I point it out is that, you know, you could wind up with kind of a watered-down economic analysis in Framework 48 that says, well, you know, things are either going to be terrible or they're going to be great.
Yeah. I just wanted to also make the comment that, you know, the Canadians expected us to have a fairly positive or we're hoping that would out of this meeting would come a positive response to the negotiations that have gone on. We don't clearly have that decision here. There is a presumption that they are going to, with open arms, accept the concept of trading. I can assure you that it's not going to be that easy, and the discussions that we had based any sort of trade on the yellowtail only after their year was complete. So there would be no chance of getting any yellowtail until after January or into January of 2014. So, I mean, those are all of the realities that go into this. And I just, you know, I think that Tom also pointed out, you know, some of the complications of how we deal with it, even if they, you know, agree to it. Those are just some of my thoughts as the person who has to work with John and go and talk to him. Tom.
One of the things that I've been thinking about here, and I understand this is a one-time trade. I think people are where they are on this motion, but as a comment to John and Rip and others, whether this is a one-off or we see it as a one-off or not, it's going to be important from a precedent setting standpoint, a process standpoint, for how we go about doing this. Right now, we're contemplating trading something that we aren't catching hardly any of for something that we need very much. That's one scenario. It gets infinitely more complicated when we have constraining quotas and different allocations from users. So the fact that we've heard from folks here at the council meeting, we see the value in moving forward here. We need to have a real open process, a transparent process with industry for how people weigh in to whether they think this makes sense for their business and how it's going to impact them. I think it's a one-off, but everybody's going to be looking at this to set up the precedent for how we're going to deal with trades in the future, and we need to have a process by which people can be heard on any of the concerns that they have. Thank you.
Paul Howard, then Dave Gaethel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think Tom hit on the crux of my concern about public input, is that if we're going to take away fish that hasn't been caught, that's fine. But what about those guys that were catching their ace and now they're going to be reduced? Am I right on that? There are a number of people that aren't catching their quota, but there may be some that are catching their quota.
Dave Gaethel.
Well, my question was actually pretty similar. It would be to Gene. Since you're talking about changing people's allocations here, is this a frameworkable item?
Well, that's my concern. I mean, I haven't thought through it. I think, you know, there's a lot of concern when we're talking about zero possession limits that's changing allocations, but we don't seem to hear that concern along the lines that Paul's suggesting. There may be people, I mean, I don't know how it plays out. There may be people who this will eliminate the value of that of their ace portion that they have in the fish that's being traded away. And it's not clear what the public system is for commenting on that. I mean, certainly the best way to allow and incorporate trades would be to set it up somehow in the system so that it's a transparent process, and that we're not just allocating sort of indirectly in ways that harm people that might not agree with their fish being taken away to trade for another type of fish.
And I think that's my point. You know, on a personal basis, you can take my 4 pounds of George's Bank Haddock. I really don't care. But there are a lot of people that may care very much. I mean, I'll go back to Gulf of Maine cod. If you were came to me and said, oh, by the way, we've decided to make a trade with the Canadians over Gulf of Maine cod, you just lost 10,000 pounds of fish, I'd be in here chewing your ear off. So there may be people that feel pretty strongly about this, and since we haven't discussed it or didn't put it on the agenda, they have no idea that we're sitting here talking about trading their fish away. And they may show up in droves at the November council meeting. They may not. I don't know. Maybe they got enough haddock, they're not worried about it. But I'm pretty uncomfortable with where we are right at the moment as to whether or not this is is frame workable.
John Boyd.
Two things. One, the motion is about yellowtail flounder and haddock. Doesn't mention cod. And secondly, while the motion is about one time, what Canadians have talked about is a trade and transfer mechanism. They haven't talked about one time. They would like to set up a mechanism that could be repeated year after year. So, and as I understand it, you know, it's something that comes off the top. So, you know, they know that yellowtail is something that is very constraining for us. It's valuable for us. And they know the same thing about cod. So this is about, as the motion says, yellowtail and haddock. And so, and from the Canadian standpoint, their interest is setting up a mechanism that could be repeated in future years. So the motion's about 1 year, and we take this, if the motion passes, as an instruction to go forward. Now, in terms of public comment, the intersessional is in February, so we have another meeting in November. So there's a lot of opportunity for people to weigh in before we meet again with the Canadians in February. So if people are concerned that there's going to be a lot of opportunity for people to weigh in on this.
Mary Beth, you had your hand up. Last, go ahead.
I think that John covered a lot of points that I was intending to make as well. The only thing I would add to that is that the meeting in February is for the TMGC, not the steering committee. And so it was my hope that this would give direction to you as a member of the steering committee that this was our intent.
I'm going to call a question. All those in favor of the motion? Twelve in favor, opposed? Five, 12-5-0, the motion carries. Is there anything else under groundfish? Dave Cathell.
Next thing you're going to hear is the sound of the Christmas tree being hurled across the room.
Mm-hmm.
It's become very plain to me in the last couple days that we're headed for, pick whatever acronym you want, perfect storm, train wreck, tornado, Hurricane Katrina, you know, make a list. There is, Eastern Georgia's Bank next year is going to be the downfall of both the groundfish and the scallop fishery. They're both going to end up closed. And I believe that this is directly a result of single species management, specifically Georgia's Bank yellowtail. In other countries, a lot of other countries, they manage fish that swim together as a stock. It's called a basket tack. And I don't think there's any way out of this mess other than to take Eastern Georgia's Bank and make a basket tack for Georgia's Bank, and people will catch what's there. And what's there is haddock. We are catching 19% of a roughly 3,000-ton quota. I think Dave Preble's previous statement on what you're talking about for catching yellowtail here, you know, like one fish every, what is it, 65 fish per square mile or something, it highlights the absurdity of the position we're in. So with that being said, I'd like to make a motion that says, in Framework 48, develop and analyze a basket tack for Eastern Georgia's Bank cod, haddock, and yellowtail flounder for presentation to the TMGC.
On this record. Well, yeah. I mean, I think Rip is asking whether this is a frameworkable item. I think clearly it is not frameworkable, even if we think there's a legal basis for doing this. This is changing the whole system of management. We have a stock-by-stock fishery management plan in place in the FMP. To go to a mixed species approach, mixed stock approach, is totally changing that approach. We've already, the agency has been on record many times now that we don't think that a legal approach interpreting Magnus and Stevens Act. Courts have supported us. We have one of those challenges is on appeal right now. But even if we thought you could do this, it's a sea change in the way you manage the groundfish fishery. Could not do this in a framework, could not make a sea change approach to do in a framework. There's numerous questions that come up. Do you allow, does it matter where the stocks, individual stocks go in terms of rebuilding and overfishing? Can you fish them down to depletion? I mean, this is a whole new type of approach that even if we thought it was legal, it would have to be done as an amendment.
Okay, then I'll change it to in the next available amendment.
Is there a second? Peter Kendall, discussion. Frank.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dave, is your intent here, and I'm just going to pick numbers out of the air, to go to the Canadians and say, we want 4,000 tons of fish, and of that, we're going to catch our haddock, our codfish, and our yellowtail. And that's just what you're going to do with the TMGC. Now, when you come back with the 4,000 tons of fish to the U.S., we're still going to be bound by U.S. law on how we catch those fish. This is just on how we negotiate with the Canadians. Is that your intent?
My intent is to get this analyzed as a different way of doing business. I thought initially the TMGC was where we had the issue. I think this could be presented to the TMGC as a new way of doing business on Eastern Georges Bank. They may not go for it, but the first thing that would have to be done as an example is you'd have to have the SSC set a basket tack. A basket tack is not a sum of the parts. It's going to be a number less than that because it has to account for interspecies interactions. And then you'd have to go and present it. And then the idea would be that you fish, people go fishing on Eastern Georges Bank, they're given a number, and they catch what they catch. It would eliminate this issue of yellowtail with the scallop fishery. Instead of being given X tons of yellowtail, they'd be given X tons of fish, and that would be their bycatch. And yes, stocks would float where they go based on their relative abundance. I mean, the fact is that people fishing on Eastern Georges Bank are going to catch mostly haddock because that's what's mostly there. And this concept is used in a lot of countries, and it works, to me, a lot better than you go catch 5 pounds of this and you go catch 5 million pounds of that. That can't work. I mean, we're at that point right now. It simply can't work. So this is what I'm trying to do here is get a concept on the record and start getting it off the ground as a way of changing how we do business.
Dave, just that you know, at the intersessional, one of the items for our discussion is alternative management strategies. Certainly can begin to discuss some of that. Paul Howard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dave, this would certainly change the way we do business. Right now, our staff supports our management and our PDT. The TMGC has its own scientists and its own committee that supports itself, and You know, so this would be a huge workload for us to do the work to have debated between the U.S. and Canada. So it's a real different way of doing business.
And I recognize that, but, you know, this says in the next available amendment, you know, we can, by the next available amendment, we may have already moved on or, you know, we may withdraw it at that time. What I'm really trying to do here is get a concept on the table and get people seriously thinking about changing how we manage groundfish. And, I mean, we could take out TMGC if that makes people happier or whatever needs to be done. But I'm not going to be here on this council much longer, and I want to lay the groundwork for how you folks do things differently in the future, because what we're doing right now, in my opinion, simply is not working.
Paul Howard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My point was, do you want ourselves to do the work for the TMGC, or do you want the TMGC to do the work? Or do you want ourselves to do the work for ourselves? This is not the way we do business. We don't do work for the TMGC.
Oh, all right, I understand that. No, I want to do the work for ourselves. And you know, if the TMGC wants to use it, that's fine. But I'm looking to change things much more than just Eastern Georgia's Bank. This was what I thought was the easiest mechanism to get the idea off the ground.
Terry Stockwell.
Yeah, thank you, David, for planting the seed. I'm certainly not opposed to the concept, but I think it's too focused. And I really, in thinking about it, I think you ought to hold that thought till we talk about priorities later in the afternoon. I mean, it's a concept of we're looking at groundfish. It's not only what we're doing to finish Framework 48, but where we're going next. And at least in my mind, it might be more appropriate to think about it than if we're looking at the next available action. That might be Amendment 18. It would have a broader scope for all areas and rather than just than Georgia's, because every area is going to need that type of different look.
Dave Preble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be very, very brief. I think at this point that I support this wholeheartedly, but I think at this point that we have both an industry and a management structure that's not familiar with the concept or its history in different parts of the world. I think what we need to start with is a white paper on basket tax, and I don't know when that can be done, obviously we're not in a position to do it right now, but we need to start there. We need to get information out to the council, to the people, that this is a direction that we're seriously thinking about, because we really do have to seriously think about it.
Tom Dempsey.
Thank you. I think a lot of people have focused on the workload issues and the framework issues and logistical issues associated with this idea, but let's just talk about the fundamental issue here, where this type of concept would be pretending that our Georgia's Bank, our currently abundant Georgia's Bank haddock, is actually yellowtail and is actually Georgia's Bank cod, both of which are depleted. If you put those in and pretend that they're all actually the same, while we know they're not, we know that the yellowtail is depleted on Georgia's Bank. We know that cod's depleted on Georgia's Bank. We know that haddock are abundant. If we pretend that we can just simply take an average and treat them all the same, we'll have one very predictable outcome. We will eliminate Georgia's Bank cod and Georgia's Bank yellowtail. That's the outcome. We'll probably harvest some haddock in the interim, but that's where this gets us. So I don't oppose this for the purposes of the logistics or the work plan. I don't oppose it because of some of the technical issues that clearly exist here. I oppose this because it's just fundamentally not a good idea. We can all be very cognizant of and disappointed and frustrated with where we are with some of these stocks, but we're there. The science needs to improve, but we have a resource problem. And I just don't agree with this approach fundamentally, and I oppose it.
Peter Kendall.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had seconded this to open it up for discussion, and it seems like it stirred a few things up, and I think that's what David wanted to do. So, but I do agree with Terry, and my first question was why limit it to this area? But we can take that discussion up later, I guess. Thank you.
Further discussion? I'm going to call a question. All those in favor? 1. Opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. I got 15. 1 in favor, 15 against. Any abstention? Motion fails. Anything else on the ground fish? Maggie?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not going to ask for something to be added to Framework 48, but I am going to point out that we have missed another opportunity to potentially mitigate the pending reductions in groundfish, because for the past 2 years we have not made any progress on the monkfish plan. And during that time frame, the landings of monkfish in the Northern Fishery Management Area were 57% and 63%, respectively. And the monkfish plan has huge conservation buffers built in between, at least in the northern area, the ACL and the ACT. And the reason why we haven't, in my opinion, the reason why we haven't potentially achieved more of the ACT is because of we're artificially constrained by the trip limit, which is totally unnecessary, obviously, at this point. So I realize that this is not something that can be done in Framework 48 because it is a monkfish issue, but this is a critical component of the groundfish fishery in the Northern Fishery Management Area, and it's a very valuable fish. And if we throw away 1 pound of it at $3 a pound, that's wrong. And we need to figure out a way quickly to stop doing that and to allow the industry to harvest what is scientifically allowed. I think we need to think further on how we might achieve this in the short term. And I think I need the council to really, I mean, if we're honest, we all know why we haven't made progress on monkfish, and we need to deal with that. And we need to get that changes, that the whole list of changes that the industry advisory panel developed 2 years ago, problems in the fishery, we need to get those addressed. The monkfish amendment barely has a title on it. And again, 2 years have been wasted, and the industry has lost considerable yield and revenue from this fishery. So, again, I hope we can figure out a way in the short term to deal with this and to expedite work on the monkfish amendment. Thank you.
Ron?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just going to be quick. Ron Smollett, Fishery Survival Fund. There's areas out there and places, times, that no gear capable of catching yellowtail should be fished. Is there anything in this amendment that's going to allow, this framework, that's going to allow analysis and imposition of that type of technical measure?
No.
This is just going to, we're not going to achieve the SSC objective of minimizing a bycatch, because yellowtail is going to be a bycatch. And it's not just the scallop fishery and the ground fishery, but those areas also have a skate fishery and a monk fishery. And we're not doing anything to identify. I mean, on a research side, we have data from the Observer program, from our bycatch survey, from VTRs, and to identify these spots. Yet there's nothing we're going to be able to do about it. We're going to assume that guys are just not going to fish there. I think that's very unrealistic.
Paul Howard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the majority of discussion I heard today is we have hard tax so that there's less of a need for technical controls. So that's what the council has to weigh, the need for a technical control versus the hard tack and allocation.
Anything else on the groundfish? Tom Dempsey.
Just quickly, I just wanted to point out that we have technical measures. They're in Amendment 16. It's hard tax, accountability measures by sectors, and the measures to ensure that we'll be avoiding bycatch yellowtail flounder are in this framework as well. That's the impossibly low sub-ACL for yellowtail flounder, and what we're looking at now, which is a further reduction of 8 to 16% of that to the scallop fishery. So we have individual accountability measures, and technical measures seem to be, a new term for an old tool, and that's imposing effort restrictions and closures on an output-based management. So I think we've covered it.
Any other groundfish business? Okay, we'll break for lunch. We'll get back at 1:30. That would be good. Thank you.